I know that not everyone is comfortable with the miracles that are found in Scripture. However, the story of Peter and Jesus walking on the water is a story that can be profoundly true at its core, whether or not actual feet were on actual water. So if you find yourself among the skeptics, don't worry. Because what I'd like to do today is to consider the story's core themes, because it strikes me that this is a story for our time. Fear and doubt are two key words in this story. When Jesus sees the fear in the faces of his disciples, he calls out, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." This is not a story, I think, in which Jesus is saying we should never feel fear. Fear is an important emotion that can contribute to preventing harm. However, a therapist will often invite a client to recognize that fear is an emotion that comes and goes. The trick is to avoid merging with the fear, such that we can no longer distinguish between ourselves and the fear that has visited us. When someone merges with their fear, it can start to feel like a potentially permanent state of being, a state of being afraid. And it can blind us to other things that are also present. At the crux of this story is the challenge of staying present to the presence of the God who is with us, even in the midst of fear and doubt. And Peter embodies this very dilemma in his adventure on the water. One of Peter's habits is to want to be where Jesus is and to do the things that Jesus does. Over and over again in the Gospels, he has a kind of full-bodied impulse to follow Jesus and to be bold. The kingdom of heaven matters to him, and even if he doesn't fully understand it, he has a sense that this has all kinds of implications for the here and now, and he doesn't want to waste time. He jumps out of the boat and onto the water without yet comprehending that so much of what Jesus does takes place within the realities of wind and choppy seas. I'm speaking metaphorically here. Jesus repeatedly steps into situations that feel chaotic and desperate. And often, these are the places where the deepest work of the kingdom unfolds, at a pace and in a way that we don't always recognize real time. There is Peter on the water, alive to hope and possibility, moving step by step toward Jesus. But all of a sudden, the reality of the force of the wind churning the sea and buffeting his body is the only reality he can see. He doesn't just feel fear, he becomes afraid, sinking into the abyss. I think for a long time, I read this story, and all I saw of Jesus was his walking on water and his comment to Peter that felt like a rebuke from someone who seems to feel no fear himself, who doesn't know what it is like to feel overwhelmed. But if we are orthodox in asserting that Jesus was fully human, that Jesus must have experienced feelings like fear. And now, as I read this story, I am so much more aware of what Jesus had been going through right before the point in which he headed out on the water. Jesus had gone to his hometown and preached in the synagogue, and people were initially amazed at his wisdom, but they turned on him and opposed his teaching because of its implications for how they lived and who they were called to love and to include. He ended up rejected by those he had known in childhood. And then, right on the heels of that painful experience, word came to Jesus that John the Baptist, whom he loved, had been executed at the whim of someone who had been offended by John. Jesus tried to get away to grieve and to take all this in, only to find himself surrounded by crowds of people longing for a good word and for relief from their suffering. He took compassion on them, teaching and offering healing all day long, and then making sure they didn't leave for home while physically hungry. At last, he sends the crowds away and also sends his disciples out on the boat so that he can climb a mountain on his own to pray. It is possible that it was in that time of prayer that Jesus became aware that the death of John the Baptist was a sign of where his own journey was headed. Jesus was proclaiming the kingdom of heaven, and in doing so, was ushering in cataclysmic change. The kingdom of heaven presented a radical overturning of systems that operated on fear, self-interest, scapegoating, control, and violence. Throughout history, humanity bends toward these ways of operating. They prove seductive, and they feel reasonable. They seem to offer us protection. But when God entered the world in human form, God asked people to surrender fear, self-interest, scapegoating, control, and violence, and to notice where these had taken root within their own theology and religious practice. He asked them to embrace a different path, a way of love. And in return, large portions of humanity found that frightening, and they chose to double down on the strategies of self-interest, the habits that were familiar. With the death of John the Baptist and the recent rejection from his hometown, Jesus could see that he would have to let humanity do its worst in order to reveal the true strength of the grace he was offering. That gives me a very different sense of Jesus out on the water, coming to be with his friends. I see him now as someone who had been carrying feelings of grief and fear and exhaustion for several days. His experience of prayer and time alone may have calmed these, but such feelings were an important part of his own context in this story. Walking across the water is a man who now knows he is going to die a violent death, and yet he keeps putting one foot in front of the other. Jesus and Peter were living in a time of cataclysmic change. And I believe that we are as well. This moment in time has so much humming around change. And like Peter, we try to live in the way of love in the midst of it all, and yet struggle to find our footing. The force of the winds and the chaos can overwhelm. It feels profoundly messy. Imagine, for example, a man in his 60s encountering a niece coming home from college who shares her recent understanding that the family is racist. He is hurt and offended, but perhaps not aware that he and his niece are working with different definitions of the word racist. To his mind, a racist is someone who hates black people, and he doesn't identify himself as someone with that kind of hate. But his niece is probably defining racist as someone who is unaware of or chooses not to see the impact of the status quo on those of a different race, missing key things that their neighbors of color are naming about how they experience life. She is naming a very normal human habit that often remains in place until disrupted in a constructive way, typically through relationships that change us. In their mishearing of one another, though, the man feels accused and defensive. He does not hear the invitation to explore a different perspective. The young woman senses his resistance and then moves to judgment, and her diagnosis of racism becomes even more strident. If the two don't actively choose to sit at the same table with mutual curiosity and stay there even when it gets uncomfortable, they will become entrenched in positional statements and fail to learn from one another. Meanwhile, for both people, the stakes feel high because this private conversation is taking place within a larger context of deep polarization across the nation, with very real battles over public policy and hot-headed rhetoric on every side of the issues involved. This scene is a microcosm of the cataclysmic change afoot in our day and age. Some of us set out with well-intentioned desires to understand the kingdom of heaven as it relates to dynamics of race, sexuality, economics, and the climate, but it gets messy fast. And part of why it gets messy is because the habits of fear, self-interest, scapegoating, control, and violence are so ingrained in our culture. Like Peter on the water, we can get overwhelmed and sink into the abyss. Whether the abyss is despair, indifference, rage, or some form of emotional or physical violence, it proves incredibly hard at times to keep looking for the face of Jesus and letting that guide us into counterintuitive ways of engaging really big issues that evade easy solutions. To choose hope and love over and over and over again in the face of that which scares us. Peter eventually looks up and calls out, "Save me, Lord." When his intentions are not enough, when he feels overwhelmed, he returns to the face of the one who saves. To live as a church that proclaims the kingdom of heaven during times of cataclysmic change is legitimately frightening sometimes. because we are drawn out onto dark and stormy waters. And yet, through the howl of the storm, Jesus calls, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." And the one who has known the reality of fear in his own body comes to us. So take heart, do not be afraid.